Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am Reggie Darden, and today I have another wonderful, great guest with me today. I got Bob Stein that I'm going to be speaking with today. And yeah, we're going to get into his journey in Kenpo and just whatever other items that we get into, then that's what we'll do. I usually start things off with just a quick history on my experience. I started in the 90s in Kenpo, and since then I have done capoeira, I've done hapkido and boxing, and I've recently got into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai, so I stay pretty busy along with the show and work and two dogs and a wife, and I stay busy, but yeah, I'm excited to get into Mr. Stein's story, and yeah, so I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over to you. Where did it all start for you? Where did you get started in Kenpo and the martial arts in general? And yeah, we'll just kind of go from there.
Well, thank you very much for giving me a voice and an opportunity to speak and talk a little about my journey. And it began in Long Island. That's in New York, outside of Manhattan. I grew up in the suburbs of New York. And we've spoken before a little bit, and my journey has a lot of similarities to you. I wanted to do martial arts. David Carradine and Kung Fu, that kind of clinched it for me. Looked like a magic, the way he moved, and it still sticks with me. Very special series, I think, for a lot of people.
Oh yeah, and, for sure.
Shaw Brothers, Bruce Lee movies, all that stuff gave me an interest. Certainly felt like a need for it, because it looked like something that would come in quite handy in self-defense situations, and certainly I grew up in an environment where it was a fear, violence was a fear, and you kind of growing up with in that environment where bullying, some domestic violence in the home, It was something that I thought would solve my problems, and in a way, you know, that's what it's designed for. That's one of the reasons. But unfortunately, it was a little bit of a delay getting involved, because my parents had some objections. Really, it was more my father, between finances and would it be used in the right way? Was it too dangerous? Would I get hurt doing it out in the street of overconfidence or misusing it? So it wasn't until I was closer to 20. I think I was just about 20 when I started and could pay for it on my own. And I found it wasn't a Valari school, but the gentlemen who ran it were former Valari students. It was I call it a cousin of the American Kenpo, or a relative. There are some similarities, for sure. And not just in the origins, but how it was taught back then anyway. Did that for about 2 years with those gentlemen. And it turned into, as sometimes it does in martial arts and in all kinds of experiences, it can turn negative. Not what you thought it would be. Turned out to be something different. And I had there was a senior student there who had become a black belt, and we had a great relationship. He was a big Ed Parker fan, a big Bill Wallace fan, and he tried to emulate both. He ended up going off on his own. I helped him. And for the next couple of years, we worked the same system, but with the idea of eventually getting into American Kenpo. And one day, the club that we owned together, an American Kenpo instructor walked in. His name is Steve Walsh, and he, in order to show his credentials, he had a box of certificates and photos, And he was an Ed Parker black belt. And it was like, wow, you know, we have a chance now to learn this. So we're not going to have to order all the Panther videos and learn from a video. We have a guy who walked in here. And that's really where the American Kempo journey started. And ultimately, after about 6 years of study, and I believe it was a little bit after, probably a few months after The Perfect Weapon had come out, that I tested for a black belt. And I was awarded my first black belt. Essentially, the material I did wasn't straight American Kempo. I had a bunch of American Kempo techniques, the first couple of forms. But it was a mix of Tracy stuff, the Valari stuff. They didn't make me start completely over. And to be frank, you know, all the instructors were in transition. Well, they were going from one set of techniques to whatever it was they were converting into in, you know, 1989, that was back then. So, you know, that's how I started with, you know, it was kind of a diverse version of Kempo right away. And my journey's kind of continued in that regard, you know, with journeys into other martial arts, and I've actually come full circle, and I'm back in American Kempo pretty much as the curriculum was written in 1989.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little jealous in that when I started in Chinese Kempo, and that was essentially that of the Tracy's curriculum, and then when I got into American Kempo, the Ed Parker American Kempo curriculum, I had to start all over. So I was a little bummed by it. I've now come to accept that and appreciate that I got to start over and needed to start over. There's so much more that I learned now than I did at previously in relation to things like the principles and the sayings and terminology and those sorts of things. In my first school, we didn't do a lot of that. So to get to really work that mental side of it was a big change for me, and I still struggle with it. I don't work on my terminology as much as I should. So I definitely need to up my game in that side of it.
There's a huge value in understanding the terminology, because essentially, you know, it's language, and that's what we use to describe the art, and that's what we use to analyze the art, and that's a tool that Mr. Parker gave us, is vocabulary, so that you and I can have a discussion today, like we're engineers or physicists or something, using our technical language, and get a deeper understanding of the art. I have this conversation lately with a lot of people. I always feel like the techniques really, really valued and focused on, I think, to maybe to a fault sometimes in American Kempo. Maybe it's and I think I understand why, but I really think that the tool that is supplied through the techniques, you know, once you have the language and all that, it gives you the default technique to do, but it also gives you something to discuss and analyze and make it your own. And as opposed to, you know, trying to take this technique as the gospel and that it can't be changed and I must make it work, that if I just take one move from it, or maybe not even a move, maybe just an underlying principle, and the move I use is different, but it's a principle I learned from such and such technique, I think that's the real value of it. And when we combine our language that we know and our scientific method of understanding things, I think the techniques have infinite value.
Yeah, that's what I like. There's so much. Okay. All right. So little technical difficulties there, but we are back. So, kind of the last thing that we were kind of on was talking about when you got your black belt, and mentioning to my understanding, you've done some other arts in addition to Kempo. as well? Is that correct?
It's correct. I did the versions of Kenpo that I talked about and wound up in American Kenpo. Happy to find that and be doing that for all these years. The next thing I did was judo, and I was so young and didn't know how things work then. You know, you think you know everything, and I remember kind of giggling a little bit when he walked out. He's wearing a red belt, and I thought that was kind of like an orange belt or a yellow belt or something. I'm thinking, oh, they're sending it to some guy who doesn't know much. And then I realized, you know, he's way up there. He's an Olympic coach and all this, and it was a really great experience. And one of those instances where, you know, you just kind of show if you don't know anything, just keep your mouth shut, watch and learn before you say something. I'm glad I didn't say anything, but, you know, remember thinking that how wrong I was. And that was a great experience. And in my initial run with Kenpo, you know, we would do the techniques, and pretty much it was when we were working with higher level people who knew how to roll and fall, we always added on a takedown if there wasn't one in the technique. And the judo throws were some of the basic judo throws were great to graft onto the end or add onto the end. And so going and doing the judo was great, that learning that combat sport, that martial art. I kind of lost touch with my initial Kenpo people. And I was just teaching my friends, kind of hovering around yellow belt level stuff. And I was doing that, not really under any instruction for a period of time. Started collecting some of the videos to keep up and have a reference point, learn some of the stuff I hadn't learned. And, you know, trying to self-correct. But ultimately, with the UFC coming out and the rise of MMA, it really made me take a critical eye to Kenpo, and not having an instructor there to kind of talk about it and guide me through it, I started to drift away a bit, you know, always keeping it there and always practicing it on some level, but the level of commitment to it, it changed, and I ended up learning some Muay Thai, learning some submission wrestling, really trying to figure out where Kenpo stood at the time. Because when I first got into it, my perspective and everybody around me who was doing it was pretty much of the universal opinion that it was the premier street fighting art, you know, that it was meant for the streets. And then I started to question it when I saw what Hoist Gracie was doing to people, including Kenpo people. Although it was in the ring, it was in an octagon, a little different than a street. But, you know, it was a way to pressure test it, and it looked like, you know, maybe we needed a new perspective on it. And I really spent a lot of time not thinking Kenpo's obsolete, but like, hey, what's the new perspective on it? How should I use this tool? You know, are there things here that just haven't been emphasized? Is there another way, you know, to do it with a different accent? Are there things we can add to it, things we can adjust, whatever it was? And I spent a lot of time, you know, thinking about that. So when I was started learning Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I was always like, hey, how does this fit in a Kenpo environment or my Kenpo background? How can I best incorporate this? So it's not like completely separate. It's not like, hey, I'm learning French and I'm learning German, and they're two completely different languages. I was trying to make it like, hey, I'm doing Latin and Italian here, you know, and how can one help the understanding of the other? And you know, is there a way to kind of make them one within me, because I'm one organism, you know, and how do I take these, you know, different subcategories of knowledge in martial arts and to, you know, use them best and make the most out of it? And
yeah, I can definitely relate to that. First, yeah, myself and definitely the rest of the world took notice when the UFC first started, and Hoist Gracie got out there and really just opened our eyes to ground fighting and grappling and the submissions and things. And yeah, I think a lot of us started questioning our Kenpo a little bit. And, you know, even though there was a a Kenpo stylist, Keith Hackney, that did very well. Still was not a, I wouldn't say not a match for Royce in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but it just was something that we the Kenpo world, the martial arts world, just wasn't quite ready for it. And we could argue about whether or not the UFC was kind of groomed for the Gracies, but it really took a, you know, gave us a lesson in hey, we've got to think about all of these different ranges and things. The other thing that you mentioned that I can relate to in doing the cross training, specifically getting into the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Well, I guess this also applies to my Hapkido training as well. But I'm starting to look at the techniques that I'm learning in Jiu-Jitsu and in Hapkido with a Kenpo mind, and trying to apply those Kenpo principles and just that whole mindset. And I think it's done two things. One, it's improved my interest in the art. So full disclosure, I was not really super interested in getting into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and luckily I found a school that really kind of welcomed me in. But when I initially tried Jiu-Jitsu years ago, it just didn't really click for me. It wasn't really interesting. But now when I'm trying moves, I try and think of the various Kenpo principles and try to apply that. And that's, I think, helped my Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, I'm still a very new at Jiu-Jitsu at this point. But I think my defensive abilities are a lot better now that I have this Kenpo mindset. And so yeah, I think it's a good thing to cross train and to apply all those things. You know, Kenpo is not just the techniques or the forms, it's all of the various kind of components to it. One thing I love, and I'm going to kick myself that I can't remember who I heard say this, but Ed Parker was asked, well, if we didn't call it Kenpo, what would you call it? And he said he would have named it Logic. And I think that's a perfect perfect way to describe Kenpo, because there's so much logic that you need to apply to make it work and make it effective. So I like that. Then the other thing that I wanted to mention, based off what you said, in doing the judo and working on the falls, I am a big, huge advocate for learning how to fall correctly in any martial, even if you don't do martial arts. Just learning how to fall correctly, I think, is so huge and so important. And I wish that there were more schools that not only put more focus on how to do that properly, but also start training it earlier. I feel like a lot of schools don't really teach the falling until you get into an upper belt, and I think it should be started pretty much day one. So
yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
I'm huge for that.
Agreed. So, like that. Yeah, it's a safety issue, and in a way, it's an insurance policy. You know, my mother's 80 years old. You know, I wish she knew judo falls, because, you know, someday she's going to fall, most likely. You know, and we don't want a fractured skull or broken bones, and so there's that practical element to it. And I think it, you know, fits into an issue. You know, it's like, I look at Kenpo as everything's there. It's like, just what do you train? How do you train? What's your methods of training? So, you know, if you're just doing the techniques and 90% of the class is on techniques and that's how you get in your basics, well, then you're not doing a roll until you get into, you know, the or falls until you get into an encounter with danger and those kind of things. And it's too long to wait. It, you know, you should be doing that when you're learning to throw, you know, a reverse punch. You're learning your horse stance. And so I just think that, you know, the art is one thing. And then how do we learn it? How do we practice it? What do we emphasize? What are we ignoring? And there's so much there. It's easy to leave a lot of stuff out. There's so much material. And we focus on the material so much and so much memorization. And, you know, it is ultimately, I look at the material really how I look at it now, even the forms. And if you see what Parker said about them, he says, you know, it's just, it's the basics. They're basics. So, you know, it's like, so what did you work today? I worked the basics. Yeah, you know, I did, you know, short form three and I did my techniques. And to me, I look at them as the basics. It's like there's basics, there's sport training, there's all different ways we train, and ultimately, I look at the techniques aren't really like, they're basics, you know, they're teaching self-defense, but I don't look at that as the self-defense. It's like a tool to teach you the self-defense, and it's not really, you know, it's not realistic enough in my mind to be like, hey, this is a scenario that's actually happening, and this is how you're going to react, and this is like pure self-defense, and I look at the techniques not that much different than the forms. That whatever reason you think you're doing the forms, and I think you could say, well, you know, I'm doing the techniques for the same exact reason as well. It's just a shorter sequence, and I'm going to take the form, and I'm going to take the moves, the basic motion in there, and learn that, and that's going to be, you know, some kind of universal movement that I could use in a whole bunch of different situations, and I think it's kind of like, if you look at short form three, I mean, it's just a whole bunch of techniques. So, you know, I think it's all basics. And when we're in there and we're more freestyling, however we're freestyling, I'm not saying, you know, some people might have the looking at freestyle or sparring is like, oh, it's point sparring. It's certain rules. But and I think it's done that way a lot. But how I learned it, I wasn't getting ready to fight on the Budweiser team or anything like that. I wasn't getting ready for a point fighting tournament or even an MMA fight for that matter. It was like we were training it and we would just fight, you know, not try to kill each other, but we were just fighting. We wouldn't stop. And if we ended up on the ground, it wasn't, hey, time out, let's stand up. We just went. And that's how we did it. And to me, that was something different than basics now, you know, But I think that when people start to understand that it's not like the techniques aren't magic, even though I do understand they might have been called tricks at one time before they were called techniques, it's like
tips and tricks.
They give you something, you know, they give you those, they've given you the basics, the basic understanding, the basic movements, the basic principles. And I think that that's the strength of the art is, and then we can analyze it like we're doing today. And we said earlier, you know, we have the language to talk about it and to really plan and understand our training so that we can train this beautiful art in the most effective ways.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the basics. I'm a big fan of forms and sets and, yeah, there are those that could argue whether or not we should do forms or whether they have any usefulness. I believe that they do, and I believe that they're part of building that foundation. And there's always that debate about that, but I'm a fan of it. I think that we should do them and learn how to apply them. And just like with everything, it's not all just straight, okay, we're doing this because that's what we're supposed to do, or we're supposed to apply it in exactly the way that we were taught. And that's the big thing about Kenpo is tailoring it and customizing it and evolving it and forms and things like that are kind of the framework for allowing us to be able to do those sorts of things.
So. I think they ensure that we get a certain amount of basics at a certain level, because if you have the form, at least memorize, I'm not saying like, hey, you know it, but if you know of it and you can do it and you can memorize it, it pretty much ensures you have like a minimum certain level of basics. And so, I don't know if the forms are absolutely crucial or not. I like them and I see their value. Is there another way without forms to get that same value? I would suspect so. But, it's been done for us. It's set up. Why reinvent the wheel to just say, well, I'm just doing more sets and I've replaced these forms with the sets so you can get the same information and end up in the same place. And I've even heard some people have done things like that. And it's like, hey, it's fine if that works for them and they understand it better and they can teach it better. But for me, I think they're really cool. I see the value and I like doing them. And I think in the end, we just keep saying that, you need to get these principles of motion down, and the forms are a great tool to, kind of prove to yourself that you have them. If you can do these forms and do them on a high level, you're kind of proving to yourself that you can move the right way when you need to. And I can give you like a little story. I had not done any competition in a long time, and when I was about 50, I think I was 57, I went into an event to compete in Las Vegas. It was the Jeff Speakman event, and I was heavyweight, and even though I wasn't recognized as a black belt in the system with my level of experience, it was only fair that I was designated to be in the black belt category. And so I did it, and I won. But the point I really want to make is, I went against a guy who's, higher level Kenpo. They changed the weight division from 200 to 210. I came in right in the middle. I started at 212. I got down to 205. And the Speakman rules are this grappling involved. You don't win on a submission, but you get 5 points if you tap the guy out. And it's like a point for a punch or a kick and 2 points for a takedown, something along those lines. It might have something a little off. So, but it's continuous. So you don't stop. They just tabulate the points as you go. And I know why I won. I won because my neutral bow stance and my horse stance and my stances are really good. And I was very stable. And I didn't get taken down. And I won essentially by piling some points up in the clinch and getting the guillotine. And it's because, why did I get it? Because the takedown attempt on me didn't work because my stance was good. And that left the guillotine open as a counterattack. And I didn't spar. I rolled a little jiu-jitsu before. It was kind of short notice, and I just kind of wanted to see where I was at. And I kept telling myself, and my mental preparation was, just don't screw up. Just see what happens. Just don't make mistakes. And I thought one of the biggest things we hear it in jiu-jitsu all the time is, your posture. It applies to Kenpo too. And I was going to make sure, that my stance was good, my balance was good. And it got me through it. I barely won, barely survived, but I did. And I chalked that up to the basics. It wasn't because I was sparring every day. Because sometimes the basics go out the window when you're doing that. So that's my preaching of the basics. That's what's going to get you through a challenge. Having just the best stances, and then everything comes from that. You transition it from one to the other. That's where you're going to generate a lot of power. That's where you're going to have good defense, and you're going to be able to stuff the takedown. And it was a way. Basically, he was trying a wrestling move on me, and it could have been a jiu-jitsu or a judo move, and the strong Kenpo stance essentially stopped it.
Yeah, it's gotta have that good base, that good foundation. borrow from Terry Silver and the Cobra Kai. Can't stand, can't fight. You got to have those strong stances and a good footwork and that foundation makes everything. So to kind of continue on that competition side, throughout your training, I mean, have you done much in the competing side, or
it's actually over so many years, it's so little over that time. So I can remember like every single competition. It was like, you know, three separate competitions, and I've had a total of four opponents. So it's not a ton. First time I did it, I was sitting on brown belt for a couple of years. I was getting ready for my black, and I was kind of like, okay, might as well compete now while I'm still brown. You know, maybe I have a better chance of winning, and I've been a brown belt for 2 years, so I'm really like a black belt. And I went in with maybe a little bit of an advantage, and there was only four people in the bracket, so I got two wins, got a trophy. That was like in 1989. You know, it's point fighting is fun. It's a sport. I don't look at it as too much. It's only tangentially or partially related to the art. You know, it's not, you know, it wasn't even a Kenpo tournament. It was Shotokan people were running it, open tournament. They called it the Empire State Games back in the day. And mm-hmm. It was just fun just to go there and kind of, you know, playing a game. You know, I always look at it as it's something completely separate. However, when I roll jiu-jitsu, I haven't really done any jiu-jitsu competitions. I haven't done any. I just do it. But I, you know, to me, you know, that's more training. It's closer. I don't feel, although that can be playing a game too, but it feels closer to like functional training for me than the kind of karate point fighting.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's definitely one of the strengths of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, is that you can essentially go 100% with all of the techniques and moves that, you know, you can't really do that in Kenpo, because then you beat up your training partner. You don't have anybody to train with once you beat up everybody in the studio. So that is... definitely one of the strengths to it. I can relate with the tournament side. I've competed in I could count it on one hand how many tournaments I was in, and pretty sure all of them I got disqualified, and they were all open tournaments, and a lot of times contact to the head or to the face was not allowed. And even though I was controlled, I would, you know, it was so ingrained to me to go to the head or give a kick to the groin, you know, always re-stomp that groin, I got disqualified from everyone, and didn't do any of the forms or anything like that. I've kind of toyed with the idea of maybe doing that one day, but I don't know. We'll see. I kind of want to do it just to say that I've done it, but I'm not really super interested in the competing side of it. But you know, now that I've gotten into the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I'm kind of toying with the idea of maybe competing in a tournament or two. I still need to learn a lot more about about what to do. But you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
Well, I think if it gives you motivation, it's a good, if it gives you motivation and gives you a reason to train, anytime we can give ourselves an extra reason, it's great.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Moving over the teaching side, you kind of mentioned a little bit before that you did kind of some teaching.
I've taught on and off throughout my journey. One of the reasons I actually left my first instructors, you know, I signed up, I forget what the price was, but, you know, it was probably astronomical at the time. It could have been like, you know, $1,500 for the instructors program, and it's like never pay another monthly fee type of deal. I paid this lump sum, which was like, you know, like 2 years of tuition up front, kind of something like that. I think they were charging like, it was a lot back then, like say $60 a month. So it probably was like that $1,500. And the idea was like, hey, I was a purple belt, and even though it was a Volare system, I think the belts went in the same order. So as soon as I could hit purple, I let you wear a black uniform, and then I got the sales pitch. And of course, I'm like, hey, they think I'm great. You know, I'm gonna do this. And you know, I found the money and I did it. And now I'm instructing. You know, that became a part of it since then. And then ultimately, when my friend, who was a senior to me, left and took me with him, I was close to brown, or I'd just gotten my brown at that point, my first brown. Third brown. And I was instructing. I was partners in a martial arts club after having about 4 years experience. And I taught. And then I had, next time really I taught, you know, informally, just teaching friends after I had gone back to college, gone to law school. I was still teaching people for fun here and there. And then I had kids. We bought UFC gym franchises, and part of the idea was that this would be a family business, and the kids, as you know, we would have a whole bunch of units eventually, and the kids would transition into that. Maybe they'd be instructors or managers, or either way, it would be a business for them to have. Didn't end up playing out that way. We ended up selling our units after about 8 years, but and I didn't plan on teaching people there. But I did, because when you own a place and you need an instructor, and whether it's for a cardio kickboxing class or whatever it was, which was mostly what I ended up teaching. And I did some private lessons too. And I helped people with losing weight, building muscle, things like that. So, you know, more general fitness training there with some kickboxing. And then I got involved with Joe Stevenson's USA MMA organization, and became a Pancration MMA coach through him, and was awarded a black belt. And for about a year, I don't own it, but it's my friend's jiu-jitsu club, and I've been studying with him for about 10 years. I started teaching basically an MMA program. We're calling it Pancration, based on the Greek martial art, the Olympic combat sport, and teaching that curriculum to jiu-jitsu people to give them some sort of a stand-up game. But for different reasons, like I never really taught any Kenpo. It was the organization I was with that would have presented a problem. And so I just kind of kept it to maybe teaching some Kenpo principles within it, because that's just how I teach and how I talk and also the stances I use, but I wasn't teaching like the curriculum itself. And so it's interesting that whatever I've taught and whatever I've done, it's like the Kenpo always is part of it. And, you know, a lot of times it's the base that I'm working from, the foundation, and I layer other things on top of it. And it's just the way I view it and you know, kind of understand it in my mind. It may not be the way other people look at it, but it helps me kind of manage it all in my head, and feels like I can get the most out of it and give the most to the people that I'm working with. And my kids, you know, I've taught them on and off. They're now men, 23 and 21. And real good news is that I'm in a new organization, actually two. I'm both with the IKKA and the Chinese Karate Federation. And the Chinese Karate Federation, you may know, is Sean Kelly's group. And he's the closest Kenpo guy that I am connected with now. He's about 3 hours away on the east coast of Florida. And Larry Kungeka, I do a remote distance learning program with him. So my plan is, I just started doing this, but seeing Sean when I can, when he throws a seminar, attending when I can. I have a friend who started up with me. We left the same place and wound up, you know, we left together and wound up together. And he's got a martial arts club on the East Coast of Florida. And he's connected with Sean and Larry as well. And he's got them both coming to a seminar Saturday. And I'm just so excited. You know, I've only met Sean once in person and trained at his seminar. Trained was really great. And I've been only on the phone with Larry and on Zoom. So to meet, you know, Mr. Kangaika, and he's also bringing Steve Russell, he's bringing his wife, he's bringing his whole team. And I'm just so excited. And it's just going to be great. And I feel like, in a way, like I'm a free agent, because some organizations have a lot of rules, some don't. And I've managed to find myself in a position where I can do whatever I want. And, you know, it's funny to say that, but, you know, sometimes you really can't in different organizations. And so if I want to train jiu-jitsu, if I want to teach my kids, if I want to go to this guy's club, I want to go to this guy's seminar, I want to do this on Zoom, it's all good. You know, and I just kind of tell everybody what I'm doing and upfront about it. And everybody knows everybody. And we're really... one of my goals, and I think you might have noticed, you know, I started a new Facebook group, and it's essentially about, you know, there's all these campoists out there, and just trying to find a place where, you know, whether it's in my group or it's outside of my group, but just to trying to find a place to meet and to collaborate more, and just kind of build an alliance. You know, you want to keep your organization, you want to maintain it, that's fine. It doesn't all have to be one organization, but you know, why can't we have an alliance like NATO? You know, Switzerland still can be Switzerland and Belgium can still be Belgium. But, you know, we can all work together with the same goal of, you know, there's bad people out there, you know, defending against them. And you know, that's not the only reason we do it. But, you know, to kind of compare notes and to, you know, make everybody better.
Yeah, I like that. I'm all for getting more unity and collaboration between the various Kenpo organizations, Kenpo practitioners. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of the politics and drama that gets in. You know, Kenpo is not the only one. It happens in every art, but I think we should definitely be more interested and involved in helping to spread the art versus, oh, well, this is the way Ed Parker would have done it, and getting into all of that silliness, or, you know, how many stripes do I have on my belt, that sort of thing. Like, we don't need to waste time on that. We should be working on improving ourselves, our skills, our knowledge, and spreading that with others so that this can grow more and not die out. Not that I think that Kenpo will ever die out, but I think it could be a lot stronger and a lot more out there if we could get together and collaborate more. And so I'm always for people that are interested in doing that versus the little infighting and unnecessary squabbles and such. So I like that. I like that. All right. So we are going to go ahead and move to our lightning round here. We've got a few questions to throw at you as we head towards wrapping up for today. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
Five swords is a great one, but I'm going to say no, because everybody would say that. So I like taming the mace. Something about slamming people like that, and it's all about your environment. That one, you know, because so many of the techniques are the person's coming at you, and there's all room to move around in any direction. Typically, whether they're coming at you from a flank or straight ahead, but you know, I like the idea of the wall, using the wall, and then that becomes almost like jiu-jitsu. It's the wall's kind of like the floor. And so that's a great one, I think. I got more that I like, but that's probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, we can let's get a couple more. Why not?
I love deflecting pendulum because it's kind of literal for me. Like, I don't have to change it to make it work. It works. And another one I liked is it Lockthorns or Locking Horns? I forget now, but
Locking Horns.
Okay, because that works too, and that was one I think I might have mentioned this in a phone call, but I had done a version of that technique in a bar fight that broke out, and I found myself in a front headlock or a guillotine, and it worked beautifully. And I altered it a little bit to the strike was an uppercut, but I checked the knee and the grip went away, and I was able to straighten up and get out of it like magic. You know, it's all this weight on me, and I was aware of a debate between two martial artists, is why it's memory came back, and they were arguing about whether that technique worked or not. And I told the one, I said, "Well, I know it works." And I thought the most interesting thing was I didn't even study Kenpo at the time, and I just did it, and it worked. So it definitely works. Mm-hmm. And when I was taught that technique, I'm like, "Oh, all right, I know how to do this." And I think that's the beauty of Kenpo, because some of these things are completely foreign to us, and we're not moving like that. And some of it is just, you know, we already know the movements. We already done things, whether it's like a ridge hand to this or that. And it's like, oh, you know, it's a ridge hand to the groin. Well, I've done a softball throw. You know, it's kind of like pitching softball. And some of the stuff just comes so naturally. And I think that's the beauty of the art.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, yeah, getting that pressure testing and, you know, like they say, to feel is to believe. And, yeah, you're taking someone out. They got you. Tied up, locked up. Give them a few shots, and yeah, they'll tell you whether or not that technique works or not. So, I like that. All right. So, next question there: do you have a favorite form and or set?
Love kicking set. I don't know all the sets, but I love kicking set because it's just a great workout, and I'm all about the basics. It's teaching you your center line, your stances, you know, how to land in the proper stance after throwing the kick and not be all discombobulated. So it teaches way more than the kicks. And it's a great workout. Do that a couple times and on both sides. And, you know, I think that's my favorite one. And my favorite form.
Very nice.
I would say, because when I'm in the mode for more basics and a workout, I think long one is great, and kind of, I feel like so much comes from that, you know, all my power generation, you know, that's it. That teaches you that big piece to be explosive. You know, if you're paying attention and to be strong in your stances, I mean, that's what I get out of it. And it's just, so if I'm doing long one and kick and set a bunch of times, like that's a great workout for the night. And I know I'm building my strength, staying strong, working my basics.
I like it. That's a great answer. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
I'm still in the infancy with weapons. So I'm really interested. I put it this way. I'm really interested in learning knife work. I don't have anything special set up. I was hoping to get some lessons from Mike Pick, but I wasn't able to convince him to teach me. But I'm real interested in knife work. I stick and knife. I walk with a walking stick, a 48-inch long staff. So those, you know, basically the Kenpo weapons, but I don't really know how to use them. I know of them is what I would say. Working
gotcha.
On it.
Gotcha. Well, we'll definitely have to work on getting you connected with I know that there are plenty of Kenpo knife folks and fans of knives and We can definitely work on getting you connected with some good instructors for that sort of thing. So I like it. All right. Last question. If there's anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would you like to train with?
Well, if I'm going to go with deceased, it's pretty easy.
Besides Ed Parker.
Well,
Kempo podcast, so that's
you know, I'll say, of course, Bruce Lee, but I think that's a throwaway. So what I would say is if I can give you two living people,
sure,
maybe you can arrange it for me.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys named Chuck I'd like to train with. The two Chucks, Norris and Sullivan, would be a lot of fun, and that would be great. And I'd love to train with Mike Pick as well. So I'm going to throw him in there, even though his name's not Chuck. but that's kind of my wish list, and I'm real happy because you know the people I'm with, they were on the list, and I'm getting to do it. And you never know what happens next.
Yeah. No, I like that, and definitely have reached out to all those folks. So hopefully, fingers crossed, knives crossed, maces crossed, all the things crossed. Hopefully, I can get one. Well, I know Chuck Sullivan has agreed to be on. We just haven't been able to get it scheduled yet. But yeah, I would. Certainly, like to have all those gentlemen on, and I will keep working on that, and we got to try and get you hooked up with them as well. So I like that. All right, so now we are at our point for shameless self promotion. So you can plug anything you want, or if there's anything that you wanted to get out there that we haven't covered that you wanted to make sure to put out there, you have the floor.
Well, I'm going to shamelessly self-promote for a friend. I have a friend, John Cruz, who owns a club called Rogue Combatives. It's in Palm Coast, Florida. He's got a great seminar this weekend. That'll be the 22nd Saturday. He's got Master Sean Kelly in Ninth Degree coming, and he's got Larry Kangaika. And two amazing instructors. If anybody's on Facebook and a Kempo person, they must know Larry because he's got like 200,000 followers and he's got all these great short videos out there of him moving around like thunder and lightning. And if you want to learn that thunder and lightning, you want to move like a master, I think the first step is coming to this seminar in Palm Coast, Florida.
Very nice. Yeah, no, I like it. I will make sure that links and such for those things are in the notes there, and very very nice. So I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and sharing your story. We'll definitely have to do this again and talk some more items and get into some more specific things, and we'll also work on getting you hooked up with some good knife stuff and knife teachers. So we'll definitely do that. But thank you again for taking the time to be on and sharing your journey.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor, and I'm so happy to have made the connection with you, sir.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkempo.com. Thank you.